Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Weekly Manga Recap Q&A episode for August of 2017. I am Nick, here alongside Chris. What's going on, man?
It's going, Nick. It's going faster than the speed of light. Life is. This is that. It started off like a tangent, and it actually became really introspective.
Then you turned it philosophical by deciding to.
Yes. And now I'm going to slowly transition it into a Sonic the Hedgehog meme, you know, where you're fast in the speed of sound, don't know where I go, gotta follow my rainbow.
Right.
You and me, Nick.
Follow you, set you free? Yeah.
Yeah. Together we will escape from the city. That's a great episode. That's a great first level to that game, by the way. You start that game just by being chased by, like, a giant truck.
I don't really know exactly how you can, like, honestly top that when you start off at that level.
I mean, it's great. It's the song that's so cheesy, but when you hadn't played the first Sonic Adventure, you didn't realize kind of how Sonic with a story goes. It was a great way to immediately be like, this is how Sonic the Hedgehog in a fully 3D world with a full story goes. It is cheesy as shit. All right, you're gonna get a theme song that's screaming about rainbows as you escape from the city while being chased by a giant truck.
I think in the second one they stepped away though from having Sonic singing along to the song that was playing for him in cutscenes. That was weird.
I don't remember as much from Sonic the Hedgehog 1. I remember being I know I've played Adventure 1. And I know that I got really, really bored of all the fishing levels and all the...
Catch Froggy!
And run away from the robot levels. Those were awful, too.
Catch Froggy.
You know, actually, all
catch
of the-
Froggy again, Chris. He's got a Chaos Emerald inside of him. You can't not catch him.
He is very important. I mean, that story, I don't know how it would have gone without Big in the cast. I mean, he really was there for every essential moment.
Yeah, biggest like, boss fight at the end where you have to, like, fish Froggy from inside of a Chaos. Like,
I believe
Froggy,
so.
Like, trapped inside of Chaos and you have to, like, cast into the Chaos's body in order to pull him out.
Yeah.
The game's weird.
It is a very strange game, although I always did think it was super dope that you were a cool robot person in some levels, and then at the end you got to be like, oh, the robot was a bunch of good birds all along.
He's dead now.
He is. But they made a sequel robot in Sonic Heroes that I think is still around, I believe.
Omega, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough about the Sonic Lord to know if he's still hanging around. I doubt they'll ever do anything with him. Along with the enormous cast of Sonic characters that do fucking nothing after the game they're introduced in. A.K.A. Silver the Hedgehog, A.K.A. Blaze the Cat,
Blaze has shown up in other games.
Has she done anything in other games? Is she important in other games? Can you play her in other games?
She was Sir Percival in Sonic and the Black Knight. She's a boss character.
Oh, who cares?
Pshaw! Also, she was introduced in the game prior to Sonic 2006, and she was an important character in that one. And you play as her in Sonic 2006, so yes.
You've given me sufficient evidence to prove I was wrong, but I refute your facts. I refute your facts and say Blaze the Cat blows. I don't like her very much. Also, the Hawk from Sonic Riders.
Jet the Hawk?
Yeah.
I know too much about Sonic for not having played so many of the games.
I was going to say, have you played a lot of these games? Like, I've played none of them. I hate Sonic the Hedgehog.
I've delved a little bit into lore, partially because of friends that I have that are into the Sonic games. There are definitely too many characters, and I think that just comes down to the fact that, like you said, every single new game introduces a new character. It was kind of nice that they seemed to be going in the direction of downsizing when they did Sonic Boom and then that game turned out to be terrible. Rise of Lyric.
I mean, they're all pretty bad, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think that the last... Well, let's see. I know that people like Sonic Colors in general. But I think that the general consensus that the last really, really good 3D Sonic game would have been Adventure 2, so.
I thought I heard some people dug, what was the one where it's the two different generations, I think? Sonic Generations?
Sonic Generations, yeah. That's, I'm mistaken. That's probably, I think, the most recent one that people really liked, and then they immediately moved away from that.
Yeah. Well, people still dig the 2D ones.
Yeah, Sonic Mania just came out, and people seem to, like, the reviews say that it's really good, so.
Yeah. I want to play it at some point, but I got so many other things I had to get through at this point. It's going to be a real back burner thing. That's going to be one day where I'm, like, super nostalgic and probably super high. I'm not going to lie. That's probably going to be a combination of the two of them. That's just like, let's pick up Sonic Generation or Sonic Mania. I pick up Sonic Generations. I'm just like, this isn't 2D at all. You lied to me, video games. They're like, no, Christopher, you're just way too stoned right now. You don't understand how it works.
This actually leads into my question that I have for you.
Okay.
So I think that we'll transition right here. Because my question then deals with buyer's remorse. What is the biggest bad, purchase? Like, this was not worth the money I spent on it, and I immediately regret losing that money that you can remember making.
Chai Cola.
Really?
Well, hold on, wait. There's a lot. There's many because
there's a backstory to this.
Yeah, well, there's many. I mentioned a Chai Cola to you before on I think actually another Q&A episode where I purchased Chai Cola bottles because I was like, I love chai tea. I'm sure I'll love chai soda.
Because, this will all totally work out.
Yeah, I'm like, these are all things I enjoy so much. This is going to be great. And then inevitably, I find myself.
You got your chai and my cola. You got your cola and my chai.
Oh, wait, these are awful together. Patooey. It tastes like just flat soda pop. I purchase a lot of things haphazardly, particularly if it sounds hipster and niche, because I just have a habit of thinking like, man, I'm going to try chai cola and I'm going to love it. And it's going to become my new, My new thing.
Best friend.
Yeah, exactly. This is gonna be like my new thing. Like how I discovered chai lattes and now it's gonna be like chai cola now. Like, Chris, what are you drinking? Like, well, let me tell you about this hip new thing called chai cola.
You got a 5-point presentation.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I think the other three bottles of the four pack I bought are still around my house somewhere, so those aren't good. But I generally make a lot of poor purchases that I immediately come to regret. Flame of Recca is one where I was like $80 down the drain after buying so many volumes back when I was like a teenager and stuff. When I was like, this book is awful.
Down volume 54. Wait a minute. This whole thing sucks.
Yeah, it really was. It's like volume 12. I was like, this doesn't get better. This just stays awful. Why? And just being so upset with how much money I had spent on that shitty series. I have a lot of early manga buyer's remorse, too. Not even that this question was related to manga, per se, but there's a lot of those. Get Backers was one of, like, a series where I was like, man, I really thought I was more in love with this series than I was, but, oh, this is just terrible after a while. A PSP was another good example. That was one where I was
just
like...
a PSP in general.
Yeah, I bought a PSP, like, man, there's going to be so many games I'm going to play with this, and I think I played, like, Joan of Arc. Or however they pronounce it, it's essentially a grid-based RPG, like tactical RPG, or a variation of like an anime Joan of Arc game that was so weird. And then I think I never played it again. And then I can't remember if I sold it or if I lost it. I don't know. I must have sold it, but there's a lot of those that were just sort of like that bad game purchases I've made over the years where I'm just like. Oh, I'm just not going to get this money back, am I? I have far too many situations where I put my money on the line on something and then immediately, 5 minutes later, I'm like, this wasn't worth it. Time is another one where, you know, not a cost purchase to it, but a time investment to it I won't get back. There's far too many mobile games. Nick, I can't tell you the number of times I've downloaded a mobile game, and I'm like, you know, there's something about just having a game on your phone that, like, you can play whenever you really want, like, if you just have, like, 10 minutes here, or you're waiting, or just something to have, that I'm like, this is the game that's going to become my magnum opus, the game that I'm going to master. I'm going to become an absolute pro at this game, doing all the sorts of stuff. And then I find out how much an enormous commitment freemium games are on mobile, and I immediately delete it, but it's a week later, and I've spent far too much time on it. There's so many, Nick. There are so, so many. If I ran down my list, I would be ashamed of how much I would be like, oh yeah, here's another one I assumed I'd be like, this would be my bread and butter for life. It's, I have a lot of problems, Nick.
That takes a little while to sink in, though, because of how they're designed, because they're designed to really try and hook you in right at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then you just hit a paywall, you know, where it's like, hey, if you want things to continue at the pace that you have been enjoying so thus far, you have to shill out the dough. Otherwise, good luck grinding for 12 hours per objective when before all you had to do was click a button and it was done in a second.
Yeah, you'll get a lot of those. You'll get a lot of ones where it's not that it's like it's a time commitment, but there's just so much grinding to do everything. Cause there's some points where there's not even paywalls because some try to lure you in by making things easy and then making it cost to do that same ease later on. But others will just hook you into it by making it so essentially the game becomes a job and you become like used to doing it as a routine. That's why I had to stop doing Marvel Future Fight, which was a great game by all the, like, stretches. It's one of the few, like, freemium games that you really did not feel like you had to pay money to be on the same level as other players with. But it was so, it was a job. I'd, like, turn on, I was like, alright, well, let me get my dailies out of the way. Alright, now I gotta go get my, PvP battles in. Alright, there's a battleground going on, so let me do my 5 battleground fights for this, motion. Oh, there's, world boss fights are up, so I better do a couple of my world boss fights. I gotta remember to do some of my, competitive, cooperative bat matches. There's 3 of those, so I gotta do those. Then I gotta go grind out my biometrics for the day, so I can get as many of my heroes ranked up as possible. And I was like, after a point, I was like, holy shit, this is a job. This is, like, I have, like, a process I had to do. There's like, I basically clock into Marvel Future Fight and then clock out a little bit later and there's nothing to it. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
My conditions for playing, mobile games are that the playing of the game itself has to be enjoyable. It can't just be like, I'm trying to achieve objectives. A big warning sign for me is if, there is some sort of limit on how long you can play the game at a time and then you have to wait for, you know, you can't play anymore unless you spend money. It's like, why? So, you know, your character is tired or whatever, so you either spend money or you have to wait 2 hours and then come back. Well, why are you making me wait to play the game? Like, I want to play it. Like, I have the game on my thing and I wanted to play it. Well, clearly now you don't want me to play it, so fuck you. So.
Nick's like, I'm outie.
I mean, there are some exceptions, like, there's actually a Disney game called Emoji Blitz, which is a match 3 game that I play quite a bit. And that has, you know, limited, games you can play at a time, but they recharge every 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, like, you only have to wait, you know, 10 minutes in order to play a game that lasts about a minute and a half. That's really not too bad. In the grand scheme of things where it's like, well, all of your stuff is used up, so wait 2 hours for everything to recharge and then you can play some more. It's like, fuck you.
One I had to learn to stop on was, it was one of those things where it was just like a bad habit being enforced that I even downloaded it to play it, but, it was, WWE Tap Mania, I think it's called.
Yeah, I got that one too.
And it's one of those games where you just tap it and you like upgrade things. And it's one of those ones where I sit there and I'm acknowledging as I'm playing this, I'm like, there is nothing happening.
No.
This game boils down very clearly to tap this thing to watch a number go up.
Yeah.
And that is it. I am doing nothing else with that. And it wants money from me eventually to keep this process going, essentially. I was like, oh, fuck this noise. I gotta get rid of this.
I played that one for roughly a week and I haven't touched it since because it was like, you know, it's kind of interesting at first, but then slowly you realize like this game is too simple.
Yeah.
There's nothing to this.
I also got Alexa Bliss out of a random pack, and I was like, well, I basically got everything I came in here for. I'm done. Bye, everybody. Goodbye. I was like Queen of England waving as I like left, turned off the game forever. Goodbye. Goodbye.
It's too simple, and the rewards come too slowly. So,
But the number of people I know who will play games like that, it's mind-boggling to me. That's one of those ones I just can't grasp like a real commitment to it. But, hey, what are you going to do?
Hmm.
Hey, I got a question for you, Nick.
Yes.
Because we were kind of talking about it a little bit earlier before we started up the show, but recently as I was in Giant, the grocery store that I work at, I was with a couple of coworkers as we went down the cereal aisle. And these are coworkers who are all around my age or so, a little bit younger in one case and a little bit older in another. but around our same kind of range. And we were just going through talking about the ways various cereals have changed. And like one of them was like, oh yeah, do you remember Sugar Smacks? Yeah, well now they call them like Honey Smacks. And there was also, Sugar Crisp, which now goes by, I think, Honey Crisp. And, they just changed those cereals that had sugar in the title. And I was mentioning, I was like, oh yeah, remember how there used to be the phrase that lets you know whether a cereal was complete garbage for you or not was
part of this complete breakfast
as opposed to part of this nutritious breakfast, which is what like Raisin Bran, things like that would be like. Have you ever like had a nostalgic memory for that time of cereals, so to speak, that time when you were like, oh man, were you a cereal kid at all younger? Yeah.
I mean, I varied between like all of the, you know, 90s kid cereal breakfasts. You know, Pop-Tarts, Eggo waffles, and cereal. I don't know if I had a specific cereal that was like my favorite or anything like that. I obviously stayed away from all the chocolate ones. But God, let me see here. I also remember some of the ways that some of the cereals changed, like, Fruit Loops got two different colors, at different times. Cause I think it originally used to just be like way back. I think it used to be like just yellow and green or something like that. And they eventually add some more. And then when we were kids, it would have been red, orange, yellow, green. And then eventually they added blue and purple. I do remember distinctly some of the commercials that they used to advertise them. Uh-huh. Obviously there's, you know, the Trix ones. That poor fucking rabbit won't get his goddamn cereal.
Even as a kid, I was like, just give him some! He's putting
it's
such
a cereal! It's $4 a box! He just wants a bowl!
Just give him some! Look at the elaborate lengths he's going to get cereal! Another actually.
No, Trix are for kids. That's ageist.
Yeah. God. Come on, kids. Get woke. I remember the.
He's fucking wearing disguises in order to get the fucking Trix.
The major shift that changed between, the Cookie Crisp mascot morality. Where, like, Cookie Crisp started as the hero was the cop who was stopping these robbers, like the dog and person robber, from stealing the cereal. And then it changed, and for some reason the cop became a bad guy. Really, when you think about it, there's a lot to analyze in the way the public perceived the police, I guess. There's a lot of political discussion in this. But
one of the criminals just became the sole mascot, and he was hip and cool and stuff.
Yeah, and it was like, out of my way, cop! And the cop was like, I failed again to catch the dog!
Of course he's Irish.
Yeah. But I'm the bad guy too, so all you rotten kids with your cereal and your sugary treats. Hoi!
Then they turned him into a wolf.
Yeah, they did. They turned him into a wolf. I guess
and he was
the
just
wolf
another guy that was unsuccessfully trying to get cereal.
Yeah, I don't know why you do that again. I feel like Trix really cornered the market on that. You needed to take like a new angle. And
Trix and Barney. Barney Trix. Rubble.
Oh, yeah,
trying to get Fred's Pebbles. Which makes less sense than Trix, because with the Trix rabbit, the kids are actively telling the rabbit, no, you can't have any, it's only for children. Whereas with Barney, it's like...
You're on the box.
He's an adult, he's an adult, and he could probably go buy some himself. I don't know why he needs to get it from Fred.
I assume that you had to have sold your likeness rights to the cereal box and probably got plenty of boxes for free as compensation for that. I mean... Let's be real on this.
Once you get your face put on something, they'll send you some of it for free, even if you don't want it.
I should know. I've got all these Summer Eve's douches that I'm never going to be able to do anything with, just as I agreed to be on the box for some reason. I don't know why they asked me to, but this palette is basically just a very nice set for coasters at this point.
Okay, I think we actually.
We've killed that topic. All right, so we actually have answers, Nick, because we like to ask our audience, we like to ask them questions and get their thoughts on these questions. And we posed an interesting one last month, which was, what are some of your favorite themes in manga? And they can be as specific or as vague, you know, there's no right or wrong answer from it. What just do you think when you see a theme kind of explored through a manga, what are some of your favorites? We got a lot of really good answers from this one.
Cool.
We got one here from the Great Rap episode. It says, I love Naruto's theme of the next generation taking over the previous, and while it got heavy-handed near the end, the sentiment was still there. And I also loved Rave Master's theme of fate versus free will. While it's something done before, I haven't seen it tackled so well. And the Silent Voices theme of communication and its importance really makes me tear up at times.
Mm-hmm.
Loon Ramayasha says, I gravitate towards series that explore the value of human life, particularly those that feature protagonists who refuse to kill. Two of my favorite anime and manga characters, Vash Stampede and Himura Kenshin, both strive to save as many lives as possible while never taking one themselves. I find those types of characters to be the ultimate heroic archetypes, taking on a burden onto themselves to always find alternatives to killing, even at a great personal cost. That's another really good example. That is a theme that I always like seeing explored, and I do have to say I like those characters like Vash or Kenshin who have gone forward and kind of try to avoid killing in any way, shape, or form.
And really actually putting that up at the forefront, you know. It's something that people complain about with, you know, for example, Batman sometimes, where it seems like he's, even when he's like, no, don't kill anyone, it seems like he's a little bit too reckless in how he treats his enemies.
It also kind of works against it, though, because maybe Batman's thought point would be a lot better if it wasn't a series that never ended, so inevitably all the people he puts away tend to just get out of jail again at some point. If the notion was that, like, a jail could actually hold this person, it might work a little bit better, but, you know, it's always a fun theme to kind of explore, at the very least. I mean,
thing is, like, how did none of these people ever get the death penalty in the Batman universe?
Yeah, I know. Apparently, like, that justice, all the judges are just like, I mean, Joker did send half of the city into a laughing rampage of serial, like, chaos and murder, but...
But he's insane! So I mean,
yeah, let's send him to Arkham. We also had Campy says, I think one of the most interesting themes a manga has explored to be the conflicting yet sometimes complementary relationships between selfishness and selflessness that Dragon Ball explores. It mentions Goku specifically, how saving the world always seemed like a secondary or tertiary goal for him. It always occurs sort of by accident as a result of him fighting strong guys. It just happens to be the bad guys of arcs. However, as the series goes on, we see a more selfless nature surrounding Goku as he begins to care more and more about the people around him. And we can see the conflicts between his selfish desire to fight strong guys and his selfless desire to protect his planet and family. This finally culminates at the end of the Cell arc when he sacrifices himself to save the planet and his friends, and decides to stay dead because he attracts evil people. Well, he definitely got some perks from being dead, and namely training with King Kai in heaven and accessing Super Saiyan 3. That wasn't his end goal. For the first time, his end goal was entirely selfless. Yeah, I can definitely see that. We have Jack Lebrano, who says, I almost don't want to use the series, considering how constant it is in the Q&A thus far, but honestly can't think of a series that best illustrates the theme of family better than JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Regardless of part, there's always a strong relationship between JoJo and how important their family is, and how the idea of family is used differently in each part. There's a lot of truth to that. They mention specifically the brother relationship between Jonathan and Dio. Joseph was trying to save Speedwagon at the start of part two, and then later on kind of becomes about this new relationship he's created with Lisa and Caesar. Part three is all about Jotaro going on this mission with his grandfather and a couple other people to save his mom. Part four deals very heavily with Josuke and an underlying storyline of his father that he discovers. And all the different parts kind of have characters end up kind of growing to find a family or some connection they make with others. So that actually is a really good example. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I like it.
Barry D. Alv says, in response to your question about favorite themes explored in manga, mine is Full Metal Alchemist and the theme of life, the value of a life, the loss of life, the birth of life, and what it is to be alive. FMA hinges on the idea of equivalent exchange, but the underlying theme is the value of human life. I think life is the most important theme in FMA, and I love the different aspects it covers in regards to it, like Al being only a soul in a suit of armor, Ed refusing to use the Philosopher's Stone because of a spoiler I won't dig into, Ed's dad coping with immortality, and a lot of people in the cast coping with death.
One thing to spoil is, but bring up Ed's dad's immortality. Okay, sure.
You don't know that part. You might forget that. That's a small part of it.
No, you won't remember it.
I couldn't remember every part of what was a spoiler or not. I'm impressed I got through some of it. And the last one I think we have here, let me just double check. Oh wait, no, there's actually, a few others to that. Alright, I'll skim through some, wait, hold on. Now I lost it. Now I lost everything. Oh, it's all falling apart, Nick.
That's it. No more.
No, actually, I think there's only like two more here. My favorite
theme. Jesus Christ!
Hey, people gave good answers to this. I want to share this. My favorite theme I've seen explored in manga is Mono no Aware, which refers to the transience of things. Series uses this as a theme, have a wistful, nostalgic, or melancholy tone, and often look back on the past with a certain amount of sadness while making the most of the present and looking forward to the future with a sense of hope. Some of my favorite manga are drenched this mood, including, and here's where my Japanese will betray me here, Yokohama Kadashi Kiko and Twin Spica? 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 Twin Spica. The former stars an android in a rural post-apocalyptic world running a cafe and watching the locals grow over the course of several years, while the latter is about a group of kids who dream of becoming astronauts in the wake of an aerospace accident which caused the deaths of hundreds of civilians. Alright, I like that one quite a lot here. And I think this is the last one we have here. This is from Pheasant Tale. Says, always appreciate the way Fullmetal Alchemist happens the subject of forgiveness, or rather the lack thereof, regarding the Ishvalian genocide. The Ishvalians Ed meet in the ruins emphasize that they did not wish to seek revenge on the Amestrians. Was that the name of the other group? They did not wish revenge on the people who wronged them, but they do not forgive them. The narrative does not condemn them for this, even though this lack of forgiveness extends to the Amestrans who were not involved in or alive at the time of the massacre. Instead of the usual, you can't just paint your oppressors with a broad brush or forgiveness will set you free, message that are especially uncomfortable in the lights of Japan's whitewashing of its actions in World War II, Arakawa acknowledges that the members of a group that have gravely wronged another, regardless of whether or not they personally did so, need to work towards atonement, not plea for exception. Forgiveness can be given, but it should be earned. So
it does definitely take a long time for Scar to come around and become an ally to the people in that series.
And he has that sweet ass fight with Wrath. Oh, so dope. Alright.
Yeah.
So thank you everybody for your answers to that. We got a lot of really good ones. And I think for our question this month to you guys, I think what I want to ask you guys is I want to take it back, I want to make it a little bit simpler, but like stay along the same path. So what is a manga character that to you is fascinating? And this can be from any kind of length that you want to go for this on. You could maybe say it's somebody who you just find extremely interesting. It could be someone who you find to be extremely relatable. It could be from someone who you find fascinating in how non-essential to the plot, but still relevant they are to the story that they're in. You know, it could be something like that where you're like, I'm fascinated.
So flabbergasting.
Yeah.
More than fascinating.
You're like, I'm fascinated. Why does Chad keep showing up if he doesn't do anything? Just, with any legs. But, you know, again, you could do that way, or you do it with a character who truly fascinates you because of their interesting character arc, anything like that. So if you have one of those characters, you want to share your thoughts with us, send it over to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com and just make sure to put answer to Q&A session or the September Q&A answer or something like that in the title, and that way we'll slide it into the right folder and read your answers when the next Q&A is done.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it. Let's get into our questions that people have sent us. I think that we're starting off with one from Satellite of Love.
I believe so.
Okay. Dear Wyruler of the Diamond Kingdom, and look out, Mars Lotzi is trying to mind control you with blood magic.
Oh, no.
Was it really that long ago that that happens?
Yeah.
It feels so much more recent. Question one, could Nick's infatuation for Hawk be a nomination for WTF Moment of the Year? Kidding. I mean, if you want to nominate for that, fine.
I mean, it's still mind-boggling to me.
I don't know why you don't like him.
It's not that I don't like him. It's that I don't get where your line crosses.
All other animal mascots.
Yeah, you're like every other one. It seems to
fuck
be
fuck Cappy and fuck Frozen. Oh, Hawk's amazing.
It's like the others are triggering instances for you, but Hawk is wonderful beyond compare.
Question two. Would you guys ever consider covering Scott Pilgrim as a recommendation, considering that it is basically Canadian manga? I don't really know about that. That feels more Western comic booky than manga to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's also a bit too familiar to people.
It might be something that down the line, if we need to like sort of stretch out our horizons a little bit more than possibly, but as it is, manga in general has such a wide range of series to discuss that I wouldn't want to reach this far out of our comfort zone to show off a series that people already kind of know about.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, instead of glossing over maybe like another piece of manga that maybe nobody knows about, or maybe we could recommend within that medium that, you know, is a better, more clear example of it.
I mean, I know we covered Incarnate, but that was more because of its actual direct connection to manga, and also because it was such a mind-bogglingly bad series, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My questions then. We have a question here from, I don't see
no
a
signature.
Person, yeah. Hey guys, I was wondering which do you prefer, boxers, briefs, or honey mustard? This is a great question.
I guess that it depends on, are you intending to use them as you would honey mustard or as you would boxers or briefs?
Well, honey mustard is the most universal of all condiments, Nick. Some even call it the omni-condiment because of its universality.
I mean, if we're talking about using it as a condiment, I'm not going to put underwear on my salad.
I might, depending on whose underwear it is, you know?
Ugh.
No, I mean, like, what if it's the fucking Strawberry Man or, like, the Candy King from fucking Candyland? He probably has, like, candy shit. I guess that would be, like, really good in, like, a sandwich. But, you know, like, I'm trying to think outside the box, Nick. You got to think in four dimensions, Nick.
It's even creepier if a guy who's made of candy is offering you his underwear, dude.
You know, could be anyone, you know?
Hello, Chris, I come from the land of lollipops and butterscotch. Don't you want to try my boxer briefs?
I'm like, do
hey!
What, I?
That was on my candy dick.
I'm like, bro.
Hey!
Less talking, more food. just joking, my real question is, what manga have you read, have you read any manga similar to The Promised Neverland? I've been so intrigued with this premise that I'm wondering if there are any other manga like it. Attack on Titan comes to mind, but it just doesn't sound right.
There are manga that definitely share some of the same traits. I don't know if there's one that is a really, really close match to it in terms of, like, you know, oh, well, these kids with no powers are trapped inside of this orphanage that they don't realize is actually a prison, and, you know, all of those different things. Being a low power cerebral type of series, definitely there are those kinds of things. In a way, Battle Royale is similar. You know, because it focuses on kids and none of them have superpowers and they're all trapped and fighting for their lives. But of course, that's a much more bleak, series than Promised Neverland is, because they, you know, resort to killing each other, and so on. I guess Dead Man Wonderland is springs to mind a little bit.
I can see that. It's definitely like sort of the idea of like a mystery going on with this place and how it's essentially a prison. I mean, it's a little less hidden of being a prison than in Promised Neverland. But yeah, no, I can see a connection there.
Yeah.
I guess it kind of goes down to what sort of angle you like it from. If you're looking for more kind of low power cerebral series, Liar Game kind of fits into that theme a little bit. It's a lot more humorous and a lot less like we're all going to die, but it does fall into that same sort of area of being a series where people without powers are trying to accomplish things by using their wits. So that might be one to kind of consider.
And if you're looking for something that's, focuses on really hyper-intelligent kids and it takes you by surprise, then Gakuhote.
Yeah, so. Just get ready to be sad that there's not more of that magical happy.
That's the real tragedy of that series.
Yeah. Apparently Danganronpa has a manga, so there's people suggesting that in our chat room. I have no idea. I didn't play Danganronpa. I watched someone else play it, and I was like, no, this is making me really,
seems
really sad.
Depressing.
Yeah, I'm gone. Goodbye. Goodbye. So, but hey, someone else suggested, so might be right. All right. Well, thank you for the question there.
Mm-hmm. All right, next up from Now 4. Dear Nick, I got a boner for murder, and Chris, crap, it's actually really hard to pick quotes with Sarge because he has less funny lines and more funny diatribes and full routines. Now, for I am writing this email just a week before Easter, so Merry Christmas, you two. Ha!
We beat you by a couple months.
At the moment, I am taking advantage of the Easter season by enjoying delicious Butterfinger eggs, which instead of having that hard, crisp bar in the middle that gets stuck in your teeth and overpowers the chocolate, these eggs have small little sprinkles of peanut butter crisp that are soft and complement the chocolate. I'm also eating Starburst jelly beans. They're not Easter branded, but only seem to be available around Easter time here in Louisiana. Here's my question to you two. Which do you prefer, Dark Souls or Bloodborne?
All right, so first and foremost, I need to weigh in on the topic presented above, because this is one of the few things we and Nick can't connect on, because Nick doesn't like chocolate at all. But it really can't be stressed how much I want to like Butterfingers, but how much Butterfingers are just hell to eat, because you get so much shit caught in your teeth afterwards. It's everywhere. It's like, I don't understand how it's in every crack. Like, you basically need to go to a dentist for a full clean after you eat a Butterfinger. Which is a real shame. So if there's a way to eat, like, to get that flavor of a Butterfinger without having to actually, like, spend 10 minutes afterwards digging out my teeth, I'm all for it. So I have to check out those eggs.
Having chocolate stuck in your teeth sounds like hell, so.
It's not the chocolate though. It's the, like the peanut butter toffee kind of thing that they fill it with. And it's really hard, but you can feel every part of it too. It's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
As for the question, Dark Souls or Bloodborne, I played a little bit of Dark Souls 1, like 3 hours worth, and it was okay. But I've never played Bloodborne. Those aren't like games that really appeal to me so much. I don't know. The chat's really getting on me now for how am I eating Butterfingers. No, what, you guys, this is not like a thing separate to me. It's a known thing. Hold on. If I type in Butterfinger gets stuck up all my teeth, I guarantee I'm going to get results. Nick, you finished waiting on this question.
Right. I've never played either game, so there you go. I know that there are entire large analysis videos online about them, but I've never played either, so I have nothing to add to the conversation.
First result sends me to the Life Pro Tips Reddit page. Life Pro Tip request, how to unstick Butterfinger from teeth without toothbrush. See?
So there you go.
Yeah.
Follow-up question, this is more related to the candy thing. Are there certain seasonal candies or treats that you make sure to get every year and kind of wish they were always around?
I used to say Cadbury Easter eggs, because those were like crazy good and only around for the Easter season, but those have started to become around a lot more frequently. Particularly like Halloween will have a variation on it, and now I think I see them generally around just all year round, just in more frequency when Easter goes around. Like, I think if I went to the store right now, I could probably find a Cadbury cream egg. Which my brother, I think, still stands a testament of like, somebody needs to make Cadbury cream egg ice cream. It's such a great idea, just waiting to be discovered. And I don't have the heart to tell him. It's just like, oh. Hold on. I feel like Annalise and I are talking about two different candies. You can't just lick it off your teeth. It gets stuck in your teeth, and it's a hard kind of candy. Like, it gets stuck. I have to step away before I get too angry.
I'm with Malph on the Starburst jelly beans front. Those things are the best jelly beans. The other one that I would point out is eggnog. I love me some eggnog.
Fucking love eggnog.
It's only around for, you know, like those, you can only really get it for those 2 months of the year, like November and December, and then suddenly it's gone immediately.
Yeah.
You can still get it, but it's much harder to find.
Yeah, and I don't know if I really want to, I really want to, like, search around for, like, September eggnog or things like that. I'm like, ooh!
Off-season eggnog.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, May eggnog, ooh!
We didn't stick this in a freezer and then take it out.
Looks like somebody whited out the expiration date. Ooh, how exotic.
Just scrawled on a magic marker.
Still good. The G backwards. I'm like, ooh.
Oh, boy.
Question here, then, from Name Not Given. So, why Ruler of Dice? And, Chris, I can't stop thinking of adventuring party names, Larios. Apologies if I'm missing some organizational bit or if it's the wrong mailbox. Nope, you're all good. Chris, you recently joined Dice Funk, effectively mean I have to watch season 3 despite the mixed feelings on season 2's ending. For those of you who don't know, every season of Dice Funk has essentially ended with a total party kill. Not, like, intentionally, but there's narrative reasons that have essentially kind of ended in some sad endings for the previous two seasons. So there's a lot of emotions that go through when you're following characters for 34 episodes. That's like, oh, God, they're all gone. All the sad things happened. I'm sure it won't go that way this time, though. Wink, wink. What I've got to know is you'll be managing to rope Nick into this at some point. I still remember the Death Talk campaign and the RP shenanigans of you and Lord Katz campaign was what kept me going there. Will this be the glorious return to the old days, long thought gone?
Potentially, maybe. It really comes down to the fact that both of us are much busier than we were before. I just have fewer evenings free than I used to back when we played together. If anyone was interested in seeing my RP shenanigans, I do talk about occasionally, Mecha GM hosts, games that I play in, on his stream Friday evenings right now.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, yeah, I do miss playing with you, dude.
It is a shame. I would like to have another adventure together at some point. I think you'd really dig Dice Funk too, based on it being
less, I'm sure.
Like, it's only an hour-long show sort of thing, generally, or 2 hours. Like, everything I'm a part of, it started off, like, is an hour, and it's inevitably, I feel like I'm a major right. part as to why it's grown to, like, 2 hours long and things like that, but...
I think that things will probably change eventually. When my personal schedule changes up, I think as long as I'm working nights, then things are gonna be, I'm gonna have that leash on myself.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I imagine at some point in time, we'll probably have another, at least one more run at the rodeo, but who knows? We could be in store for a long new adventure at some point down the line, but, I would definitely love to play, whether it's in Dice Funk or somewhere else. Another game with Nick, because I think the last one we played in together was Shadowlands with Mecha GM. Is that the last one we did together? I think so. Because you weren't in Two Worlds at all. Yeah, I think it was Shadowlands. So, yeah, it's been a while. Been a while. But thank you for the question.
Well, we've got one here from Supernova RX, but it looks like it's just an answer instead of a question, so...
Okay.
All right, so this one next comes from Krobo. Hey, Why the Last Man and Rollo Shitster T. Shitster, okay.
Yeah, well, it was my superhero name, or supervillain name. I made it up on the Super Layers for his podcast where my power would be... It was after I found out there's a pink kryptonite.
That is a good villain name.
Or it is a pink kryptonite that just turns Superman very fey, and that would be my power, is just to, like, sneak into really important situations where Superman's in, like, a fight, and he's just like, oh, man, it's Hans the Dickens out here. And I'm just like, wait a minute, why am I changed? The shit star must be here! And it's just me, like, walking away, like...
okay. First question. Your podcast seems to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are you so popular?
Tough
question, but a fair one.
I mean, who has so many ways?
Nice reference. But seriously, if it hasn't already been revealed by the time you get to this question, do you guys have any theories on the meaning of the numbers in The Promised Neverland? The writer has mentioned in the author comments that some people have already figured them out. Yeah, we just had all the grid stuff revealed about a month or so ago. So there you go. Also, what are Chris's thoughts on the Wonder Woman movie?
I will let you know when I watch it one day, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either yet.
I legitimately, it's just one of those things, I'm like, I just don't have much of an interest in seeing it, and I'll watch it, I'm sure, at some point, but it's just not, like, the number one thing on my list to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, I hate women. Shit, I was supposed to keep that part quiet. Damn it! Ah, fuck. All right, well.
Slipped out at the last second.
It's out there now. That's right, I'd be reading, so I don't know why I stopped to take a drink. This is a question here from...
No signature.
Dear comrades, given the direction board. I always said, dear comrades, so I feel like I had to do the entire thing.
Yeah, I go through the whole thing. That's the identification. Yeah. You get a voice instead of us saying your name.
Yeah, exactly. Given the direction Boruto is going, I get the feeling that the manga is going to play a romantic comedy relationship between Boruto, or sorry, romantic relationship between Boruto and Sarada, and I can't help but get the feeling this is a way to rope in the disappointed, angry Naruto and Sasuke slash, Naruto Sakura shippers to read the Boruto manga and buy the anime, since Boruto Sarada seems like an indirect, not to mention fanficky, way to satisfy those fans. What say you?
I mean, given what we've seen thus far of their relationship, and, you know, I haven't watched the Boruto anime, so I don't know how that relationship is going, in that. It doesn't seem as though that's the direction that is being headed in, at least initially. It could very well develop into that, because not every, you know, romance in an adventure series is something that is built on feelings that were had in episode one. But just based off how they've been bouncing off each other, they don't... Well, I guess Sarada's... Has Sarada displayed any form of crush for Boruto?
She's definitely had that female side, like, secondary character to the male protagonist who's just like, wow, I guess he really does just keep surprising me kind of thing. It's never been outwardly expressed as, like, a crush, but the groundwork would be there for it to transition into one, I think, really easily. Yeah. I feel like there's a term for that kind of character who's, like, not quite at the level of saying there's a crush, but who's definitely, like, got the groundwork laid out for it.
Mm-hmm. In terms of it being a way to appease the previous shippers, I don't think that it's really directly that, even if they do go in that direction, because, I mean, it just sort of seems like a natural thing that a lot of writers do whenever it comes to second-generation stuff, you know? The main character's kids hook up. That's just kind of a thing that is almost a cliche whenever you deal with sequel series kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Cause you could argue, I actually, your point is actually a really interesting one, unnamed person. because I do think there is an element there of like, huh, this is kind of a way for people to get like a Naruto Sakura relationship and I guess a Naruto Sasuke one too, technically, although I don't think Sarada really embodies much of a Sasuke kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's sort of like that same thing of like, if the end of Bleach had you like, oh, is this their way of doing an Ichigo Rukia and Ichigo Renji sort of like pairing or whatever? It's like, I guess you could look at it that way, but as Nick said, you kind of just generally will see these sorts of series with a new generation sort of pair the characters of other main characters up. So I guess you kind of get it.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to a question from Rogo. Dear Y-Ruler of Time and Rolo T, sorry for the lack of clever nicknames. I'm not good with that kind of thing.
It's okay.
Reading back My Hero Academy, I've noticed the series keeps bringing up the idea that a hero can become a villain very easily, even if it's just in small ways, such as Meatball Guy being warned about idolizing Stain inadvertently. The idea keeps popping up. Part of me suspects that this is because at some point one of Class 1A is going to make that shift. So my question for both of you is, who do you think out of Class 1A is the most likely to become a villain in the future? Similarly, I'm actually wondering if there is also a hint at a villain becoming a hero. They've mentioned villains having missed out on guidance a few times, so I'd also be curious to hear if you think if any of the League of Villains will be redeemed in the future.
Hmm.
Well, I half-jokingly say, like, the spy is a Gakure. You know, that's just kind of the thing to that question that gets asked a lot. But they have definitely brought up a couple of different times for a few different characters. You know, Bakugo is the one that it's most commonly used for, although it seems as though he's finally moving away from being in danger of falling to that with his most recent developments. But they also teased a little bit with Ida when he was going after Stain for revenge.
Yep.
So I think that it's more a kind of thing where the temptation to do things the wrong way is just always going to be there for a few characters because, you know, personal desires don't always match up with the morality of being a hero. In terms of villains being redeemed, I think that the most likely is probably Twice right now because he seems to be portrayed the most sympathetically out of the league.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, maybe twice, and there's a maybe, I guess, a very strong, a slight outlier of, like, if Toga got her shit together, like, just in that Harley Quinn kind of way of, like, get through the crazy, and then maybe you could find the human person underneath.
Flush, who doesn't want to hang out with Brain Girl?
Yeah, oh, I'm going to be naked Brain Girl. I mean, come on, if that doesn't sound like an awesome fetish waiting to happen, I don't know what does.
All right,
here. Next question is from... the Great Rhapsode. Dear Nick, ouch my finger Freeman, and Chris, read Frank and Fran, you pussy. Hey, why did Nick get a last name and I didn't? Whoops, sorry to come off mean there, Royalty. I was just quoting Nick from your Attack on Titan review, and I want to know, since Nick keeps up, how has recent Attack on Titan been, in your opinion?
Maybe I was keeping up with it back then. I haven't read Attack on Titan in a long time. Like, I'm a few years out of date, so...
Second question. Chris, would you watch a Full House-style TV show starring Chad, Elfman, and Bucha as the dad and two uncles and have Ray, Norman, and Emma as the kids they are raising? Hell yes, I would watch it. I don't even... It would be weird since all three of them kind of embody the same archetype of the strong person. I guess Chad's more reserved, so there's, like, your uncle or your Bob Saget-like character in that.
Right.
Yes,
I'm just imagining, like, Elfman doing horrible impressionist stand-up and having shit catchphrases like, cut it out.
Well, I like the idea of him having,
like... Butchie is the young, sexy one.
Just with this shitty Elvis impersonation, like, oh, like, I've never seen fat Elvis before. Like, I know Elvis was kind of fat, but you're out of control. He's just like, oh. Oh, man. No, that just sounds glorious. I love every image that's coming to mind.
If it's Ray, Norman, and Emma as the kids, which of them has to be played by twins, and which of them has the quirky next-door neighbor best friend?
I think Norman probably needs the quirky next-door neighbor friend. Just needs that little extra boost to help him out, because Emma, you know, she's the charming one. She's the cute kid everyone likes, and Ray obviously is, you know...
I'm a middle child. I'm the best.
I'm the best child. Everyone likes me. I don't need twins, because I'm basically two people
already.
Who
the fuck is the middle child in that series? I don't even remember. It's Michelle?
Yeah, Michelle's the young one. It's DJ... what's her fucking name? I watched two seasons of Fuller House. I should know this.
See, if I were Ray, who was the male child, everyone would remember me, and I'd be the most popular.
Stephanie! Character. Stephanie! I got it! Stephanie! She was great in the new season. She has...
I know far too much about Full House for having only watched probably maybe three episodes.
I didn't watch it much as a kid, yet I've still watched both seasons of Full House, and that's why my brother gets so angry at me that I haven't watched the last season of Breaking Bad. He's like, you watched both seasons of Full House but not finished Breaking Bad? And I'm like, but I can have Fuller House on in the background while I do other things. You don't understand.
It's much easier to just mainline a series like Fuller House. The easier a series is to consume, the easier that it is to binge watch. That's why I've watched all of Modern Family.
Yeah, exactly. Modern Family was like such a great series to like just digest all at once. You're like, oh man, this series is great.
It's in these nice little 20-minute bites. And everything is really easy to consume. I put it on while I'm like playing a game and, you know, just sit back and relax. Like I fucking love The Wire, but I keep on stopping every like two episodes for months because I have to pay such close attention to it to really get it. And yeah, it's just, you know, different types of series just have different, you know. Anyway, this is only the second question.
True. Third question. I remember you did a joke about Nega Weekly Manga Recap, a universe where you hate New World Trigger and wish it returned to what it was when it started out, and that Nega Nick loves Sasuke. What other opinions or traits, what do you think other opinion or traits writing in Nega Weekly Manga Recap are?
We have big fights with Annalise because she won't stop hating on our favorite series, Black Clover.
Yeah, she's so vicious towards it. She hates it so much. We keep bringing on Jeff, and all he does is talk about how easy and awesome it is to pirate manga. Like, just nonstop. Every day, he's just like, guys, why are you buying this legally? Just steal it.
Just stream it.
Me and my Pokemon podcast that I do.
That's the opposite.
That's his opposite, yeah. Oh yeah, we love Shodan, of course. I was its biggest proponent. And of course, because it's Nigga Shodan, it's lasted for 17 volumes already.
Ooh.
Hey, we gotta be real here, right? Fucking Weekly Manga Recap, our World Triggers come back at this point too in Nigga podcast world.
And we're just begging for it to go away again.
They're like, oh, why won't it leave? God, when's Fairy Tail coming back?
Bleach had the best ending, guys.
Jeez. Oh,
never seen something so poignant and wonderful. Everything wrapped up so nicely.
I've never seen a series close so perfectly.
Also, there was absolutely nothing strange to note whatsoever in the ending of Toriko.
No, it really had everything made perfect sense. You never saw a single visual on that page that made you question anything about that universe that maybe was never explained.
Oh, man. I thought of some more, but it's just so easy to come up with them.
One day, a whole universe will be created. It'll be like our phase.
We'll get our own Elseworlds lineup.
Oh, yeah. Fourth question is, the resident fairy tale expert, aka the appendix of your fan base, I was reading the recent Q&A done in Volume 60, and here admitted to everything with the Urza Pass Tower of Heaven has been spur of the moment, and he has had no plans for her after that arc because he was going to kill her off. I believe that's where a lot of Urza's problems come from, because he literally has been writing in the spur of the moment style, trying to substitute development in the cool looking feats that feel hollow because there is nothing to them. Do you believe this is the cause as well? And do you believe if Hiro had decided to give her long story development similar to Kageo and Lucy, she would have been a better character?
She couldn't have been worse.
I think she definitely would have been better in the long run. It's interesting you use Kageo and Lucy because those are two sides of the coin of what Hiro did to a character as the series went on, where Kageo got better and got development and became a better person. Lucy got less and less relevant to the point where you're like, oh, yeah, I guess you were involved in the final arc somewhat. You did that book thing. That's kind of important, I guess.
She did at least change over time, though.
Not for the better, I would argue. I've been rereading a lot of Fairy Tail, and she is far more relevant and interesting at the start of the series than she is towards the end, when you're like, wow, you had like 12 interesting, like, stellar spirits, and you didn't do anything with them at all in the final arc. Like, they just weren't even around.
I lost Aquarius. That's all that matters.
It's like, wow, okay. That's fair
wasn't
enough.
Wasn't there an entire, like, mini story about how you discovered that a guild member of yours was actually a stellar spirit and then he became your partner and, no, he's gone? Okay, fine.
Isn't there another question about how you actively are still the stellar spirit owner for Aquarius's boyfriend and that maybe he had some interesting kind of thoughts of the fact that you lost Aquarius and are trying to get her back?
No, never gonna talk about that? Okay.
We're never gonna develop Taurus past being just a crazy, perverted, musclehead or anything. All right, fine.
What's that? Anything that involves you doing anything other than getting put in skippy outfits or no clothing at all, you're not going to have any interactions with your stellar spirits? Okay, fine.
Don't you remember how one of the stellar spirits you raised was actually one of the major antagonists of a major villain group at one point, and Capricorn has just done really nothing of note since then, when he was apparently strong enough to be like a major challenge for you guys at one point for your weird time skip? All right, I just, whatever.
No, so what about Virgo? She seemed to have like some sort of weird stuff going on with it. No, okay, never mind.
Yeah, I guess it's all these things, we just won't deal with them.
Getting back to the original question.
Would Urza have been better had he planned these sort of things out? Yeah, I'm sure almost absolutely. Generally, when you have time to plan out things with a character, you can write them out in a more interesting way. But in the way he developed her now, people really dig her too. So, who really knows?
I definitely will say, though, I do believe that he did not really plan anything with her and just kind of just did stuff by the seat of his pants. Because there are definitely a lot of Urza moments that you can make note of. You made, you know, a list of the 10 worst Urza moments in the series. But when you think about them, they're all very much like in a bottle. Nothing really led up to any of the stuff that Urza did. Any of Urza's involvement, really there wasn't a storyline to go along with it. I mean, she was trapped by Kyoka for a little while, but nothing really came out of that. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, it just boiled down to because she's Urza, and that was it. So, meh.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of stuff where I feel that Hiro puts things out there and doesn't necessarily have the follow-up for them. I'm trying not to spoil something I'm currently working on where I've been noting this really weird situation that cropped up in, like, a character and their development. But, yeah, I'm knowing a lot of things about Hiro's style from rereading and kind of looking at things a lot more closely. And there's definitely a level of he kind of just puts things out there to a certain extent and then just goes off of what's popular. And I think Urza being a lot more like Natsu and Gray and everything like that became what was popular. And that's how her character kind of became from there. Because at the start, she was a lot more reserved and conservative and strict. Fifth question here. Please don't feel this rude, Chris, but I believe you're actually wrong in comparing early Fairy Tail's guild to the Black Bulls, because while Fairy Tail got in trouble with the Council for the Destruction, in terms of popularity and status, Fairy Tail was well-liked and considered very popular. If you recall the first chapter, Lucy wanted to join it because of how popular they were, and in the Phantom Arc, the Phanto Lord Master says he wanted to crush Fairy Tail because Phantom and Fairy Tail were tied for the best guild in their country. It wasn't until the time skip that they were considered a failure guild because of all the famous mages were on the island and the fodder that was sent out to compete in the games for the last 7 years made fools of themselves. While the Black Bulls are literally considered outcasts and screw-ups by country and status. All that said, do you two feel as though you felt you've forgotten things about the series you've read and that you'd like to be able to remember? Again, not trying to be rude with that statement.
Yes, we've forgotten things about series we've read.
Oh, yeah. I legitimately, this is something that I really am trying to get better at, but there are a lot of series where I've forgotten things. Fairy Tail is a great example. I so many times I feel like I've mentioned something about, like, you know, and this fake Dragon Slayer thing, which really still doesn't make sense. It's like, no, like, they did explain, it's just they implant this thing into themselves. It's not like a big mystery, and maybe it's just because it was kind of presented like it initially that you keep thinking it is, but it's just a small fact you've forgotten over time that you keep harping on. It really isn't a big, like, I kept thinking that they never explained it when Cobra got his, like, powers revealed, and it's like, no, they did. He just said he implanted it into himself. That's, like, the beginning and end of the mystery for him. That's how he has it. And it's like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just seems so unmajestic if you could just, like, stick something in yourself, and you're like, I'm one of the most powerful characters in the series now. But, yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff that I forget over time that I wish I'd remember. I mean, it kind of comes with the fact that I'm not a very, great person with a long-term memory, but...
Okay. Next up from Jack Lebrano.
Long ago in a distant land, Nick, the shape-shifting master of dark t-shirts with skulls on them, and Chris, the foolish samurai warrior wielding a magic sword of honey mustard, stepped forth to answer some questions.
Hey,
as you can tell, I had...
You forgot about my magic sword of honey mustard.
Before the final blow was struck, I asked the first question.
As you can tell, I have Samurai Jack in the brain this month, and I have questions for Nick regarding it. Seeing that Season 5 will undoubtedly be long done by the time you get this email, I just want to ask, did you think this season was satisfying? Yes, I thought it was really good. Primarily because I thought we would never get a conclusion to the series after waiting for it for 12 years. But even putting that aside, it went in some directions that I was very surprised to see. You know, with the darker tone, the stuff with Ashi, that I would never have predicted from the Samurai Jack that we knew back then. But it was all done very well. And I liked the way that it ended. There were some things that I wish there could have been a little bit more time spent on. I've talked about it with my friend Jeff, and he said, man, imagine how much better this would be if it got, you know, like twice as many episodes or even 13 episodes, because things need to be a little bit compressed in certain places that could have used a little bit more time. But even with all that, I considered, like, it's a very emotional season to go through, particularly towards the end, and I'm very happy with what we got. A related follow-up question, what are your, or Chris too, if he has ever watched it, favorite Samurai Jack episodes of the original series? There's so many good ones. probably the single best one I want to say is the one with the assassin drones, the eight basket looking ones that each have a different weapon. There's also the one where Jack has to fight the minions of Set, and he just has to go around these ruins gathering clues and artifacts. There are also some comedy episodes that are really good. The one with the different shoes is a really funny one. And there is also one that's just a mini episode because it's part of like four different ones that I think it's like the Seasons of Death or something like that. Each of the four mini episodes that make up the single one is based around a different season. The winter one is just about this like group of these barbarian, Yeti people who, are preparing like their ultimate warrior. They go through this long process of crafting this amazing sword and choosing the best warrior from their group to wield it. And he ends up, you know, encountering Jack in the wastelands, and Jack cuts the sword in half and defeats him in one strike and then moves on. And that's it. There's so many good episodes of Jack, that I'm sure that I'm forgetting some of my favorites because almost all of them are amazing. Did you ever watch Jack?
I've seen episodes of them, but none of them really stick out. I never hated the show, just didn't really catch my interest as much. So I know I've seen episodes, but I couldn't recall any. The Scotsman. Is that an answer?
Of course. Yeah. Any episode involving the Scotsman's a good episode, so. As for Chris, I know you don't seem to care about the Persona series judging from your last Q&A in April, but I'm sure it goes without saying that it was heavily inspired by JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and seeing how influential that series is, I was just wondering, were you introduced to JoJo through some series doing JoJo references, or was it something else?
No, I was entirely introduced through JoJo purely by its own product. The third series volume started coming out here in America. My friend Frank, who is, I've mentioned several times, the person who helped get me into manga, he purchased the volumes because he basically purchased every series that got a volume release from Shonen Jump. He kept mentioning how cool of a series it was because it had really cool powers, and that's the sort of stuff he got into. And he lent me the manga to read at one point, and I read that, and then it just became kind of a thing from there. So I didn't read it off of anything that it kind of was influenced by or influenced, but I do think I will want to give Persona a try at some point. I have a PS4 now, so I could play Persona 5 at some point. I have a couple other series I'm trying to work through first before I can spend any time on that. But yeah, there you go.
Okay. Sincerely, Jack Sadly Not a Time Traveling Samurai Librato. Okay.
We're all kind of sort of sad about that. I wish I was a time traveling swordsman. All right. Question from Kenny Varnes. Dear Nick, Chris, Nickleby. Nickleby?
I think so.
Do you like questions? Rhetorics aside, here they are. Question one. For Nick, any plans to assassinate Justin Roiland and Dan Hartman for creating the abomination known as Rick and Morty and save the human race from being brainwashed with cult converts such as Doug Ego Raptor and Zach Psycho Pebbles Hadle?
First off, it's Dan Harmon, not Hartman. I don't know where you got that from.
Oh, they're coming in harsh!
I do really not like Rick and Morty. And it does get annoying to me frequently that I see so many goddamn references to it online. People are fucking obsessed with it to a stupid degree. Like, the fact that something like, you know, Pickle Rick will come around and people are like, oh, Pickle Rick! And it's like, whatever. But, you know, you're allowed to like whatever you like, and no, I'm not gonna, like, go on some tirade like, oh, we need to end this series or anything like that. It's like, I just, you know, it's very easy to not watch it. Yeah.
I still to this day, I don't watch Rick and Morty. I've seen clips of it and just never really hit on me, like, in my sense of humor, per se. So I still don't really know the exact premise of it. I've had people try to explain it to me before, and it's like Doctor Who. I just can't grasp it, but I've seen bits and pieces of it enough to know I don't want to watch it. But, I don't get annoyed by the memes and such as much enough to, like, be angry at it. It's just not for me, and anything that's popular is gonna get memed, you know, to death, essentially. I'm sure Nick gets hit with a lot of, like, Game of Thrones memes, too, that he doesn't like. And it's like, well, you got to kind of deal with that. Like, I love Game of Thrones, but I, you know, at the same time, it's like, I recognize there are people out there who don't and just had to put up with it. It's like any time one of those really popular events is going on that you just don't care about, you're like, I'm going to look at Twitter. Oh, wait, the Grammys are going on. No, fuck no, I won't anymore. Like, I'm just going to move away from this. This is their night.
And then you get, you know, eventually you get your revenge by participating in all the wrestling talk, you know, so.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just like, did we have it on our WrestleMania or on the Super Bowl? Every time I see someone do a superb Al joke, I'm just like, go fuck yourself. I know there are days when you do the same shit on your end. Like, and no one has to post some,
more
like...
people on my timeline talking about the Super Bowl. It's like, come on.
It's like, yeah, then just get the fuck off of Twitter. Or talk about whatever you wanted to talk about. No one's stopping you. I'm not going to be like... I'm not going to be talking about the Super Bowl. See you tweet something about arms and be like, hey, dickhead, we're talking about the Super Bowl right now. Get off of Twitter. Like, just enjoy it. You don't have to shit on what other people like. Just because it's on right now and that's what people are memeing and talking about.
Yeah. Literally, I think the only time that I've actually tweeted about Rick and Morty was when there was a bit of controversy because they pulled an April Fool's joke by airing the new Rick and Morty episode like 20 times or something like that. And when the new Samurai Jack episode had been scheduled to air. And so... there was a little bit of controversy, but the general sentiment that seemed to be was like, well, yeah, but you see, a lot of the Samurai Jack fans are also Rick and Morty fans. So, you know, eventually the people will put their differences aside and it'll be all cool again. And I'm just like, fuck that series!
Oh, I'm a Samurai Jack! Screaming like into television. Question
here. Yeah, it was only when I had like, when I had something to actually offer about that and also more just a joke to make. When it's like, I don't really care. And I mean, look, the things that people like about Rick and Morty, I get them. And I feel as though in a different presentation, I would really like the series too. All it comes down to is the fact that I fucking can't stand the way that the main characters talk. It's because of the deliberately improv-y style that they have. It's just annoying to me with all the belching it is and, I can't get past it. I absolutely cannot. And I know that that's not a problem for a lot of people, so it's like, okay, if you like it, whatever. I just won't watch it.
True that. Question two, have you ever hated something so much that you wanted whoever responsible for it and their respective fandoms to die horribly painful deaths, preferably by chainsaw? No, I've never been a sociopath.
Well, it depends on how you define fandom.
Well, the examples given are Rick and Morty, Ruby, and Air Gear. And to that extent, I don't want them to die a horrible
death. Those are harmless
death.
Enough.
Yeah.
Now, something that, like, well, you know, cause people to become more hateful and bigoted and stuff like that, then maybe, you know, you might consider it, but no.
Exactly. I'm not going to read question three here. Question three, though you might have had
a legitimate plot. I was going to ask you if it was okay to talk about the thing that happened 8 years ago, but we'll just go past that.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything to really bring up in this. So we're just going to skip over to question four. What are your thoughts on George Lopez? No one ever talks about him when it comes to famous comedians, and when they do, it's either that one backhanded joke for Family Guy or his appearance in the infamous Machinima Counter-Strike for Kids.
I don't really have a stance on him, honestly.
I'm not a huge fan of George Lopez. I don't have anything against him, per se.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point in time where I kind of was delving a bit more into, like, having Hispanic roots. It was around the time Eddie Guerrero was huge, and I really wanted to feel like I connected, despite the fact that my family's European Spanish, so we don't even have that lineage.
Right.
But I was never able to just get into George Lopez. It really just comes to the fact I didn't grow up in that. Like, his humor is very centric to that community, and I think if you grow up maybe with more of a connection to that, it probably is funny, but he was also just an older comedian too.
Yeah.
That by the time that I was the age that, you know, I could listen to him, I just had too much of a distance from him. Just didn't find him as funny, but
yeah.
I've never had
My grandmother, who is a little old white Southern lady, thinks that Martin Lawrence is hilarious, and I look at him just like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's what happens, you know?
Yeah. I also don't know enough about George Lopez as a person. I think that he's got an okay reputation, but I don't know.
I'm trying to remember. I haven't thought on George Lopez in a really long time, so that plays a part in it. But I feel as though he did something. I feel like he helped move his show afterwards to help, like, accommodate Conan when he went to TBS, I feel like.
Oh, that's cool.
I maybe misremembered it, so don't quote it on that. But I never had anything against George Lopez. He just never was particularly one of my favorite comedians, which is fine, you know.
No. You have a lot of different preferences, as we just went over. Yeah.
I've recently gone through a lot of John Mulaney stuff, though. John Mulaney is hysterical. I saw him recently live. He's doing a tour right now. If you get the chance to see the new tour from John Mulaney or the special, I guess, when it inevitably comes out on Netflix, definitely watch that stuff because it is hysterical.
Well, let's see. There's nothing on his Wikipedia page about controversy, so that's a good sign. Always a good sign.
Yeah, it always is nice to know. Generally, if you haven't heard somebody come up in the news recently, it's a pretty good thing, too. All right. And the last two questions here are memes, so well, thank you for the questions there, Kenny.
All right. Let me see here. This comes from, this Deskel? I don't know how it's D3SGLE93, so I'm going to guess Deskel93.
Yeah, go
for it.
I'm
going to guess that. Dear Roll, oh, for the love of fuck, I cannot come up with a decent tile gag T, and why don't I just go with this stupid shit for now and fix it later, Ruler of Time?
Oh, I've had so many of those moments.
Good evening. If my calculations are correct, which I'm 10 billion percent sure I'm wrong, then you guys are reading this question in the third week of July or second week of August. That second one was very close. So. I've got a couple of questions I think are interesting / entertaining. Question one, as of the time I'm reading this, Seven Deadly Sins was just recently added to the recap, so in honor of that, what are your favorite uses of the Seven Deadly Sins in manga? There actually aren't a whole lot of those, honestly.
I mean, the Fullmetal Alchemist ones come to mind easily.
That's basically it, in terms of, like, famous examples. Like, I looked up specifically, like, a list of... I looked around on, like, TV tropes and stuff like that for references to the Seven Deadly Sins in anime and manga. There aren't a whole lot. Apparently, they show up in, like, Reborn at some point. And they're actually referenced.
Huh. Wow, I forgot about that.
But honestly, I think that aside from the Seven Deadly Sins themselves, probably the best one is just going to be the Homunculi from Fullmetal Alchemist.
Yeah, that probably comes to mind, in the first version, anyway. They were pretty sweet. I do like them as a theme for developing.
Okay, and then in the same vein, Seven Deadly Sins versus Seven Homunculi, who would win, both individually and as a team? And which fights would you most want to watch?
I think it is pretty unanimously going to be the Seven Deadly Sins from the titular series, just because most of them are, like, near godlike.
They're just on a different tier of power, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think who would be the most interesting fight for King Bradley, because that's the one I'd want to see the most. Bond would be a pretty interesting fight, I guess. Melodius might be a pretty interesting fight.
Mostly regular guys who are immortal fighting each other, you know?
That would be pretty dope. Like, just seeing them, like, you know, like, exploding each other in half and seeing them come back for a bit and shit like that. That would be pretty dope. Diane, I guess, versus Pride, or not Pride, Sloth, I think, was the one digging underground. I guess he'd be the only one who'd be even remotely a match for physically.
In terms of power, yeah. I guess you could always get, Envy's monster form, maybe? Yeah.
You could do Lust versus Merlin, too. The sultry, super sexy chick.
Who has the most cleavage?
It's just like, it's the battle of the curves. Then it turns out being like this really super metal, like vicious fight. And you're just like, I didn't expect this at the start.
Blood everywhere.
they labeled this as the battle of the curves. It felt so sexist, but then it turned out so violent.
Alright. Question three. The main protagonists of each series in the recap discover that their powers and abilities are caused by stand rather than their normal reasons. The powers themselves don't change, only the reasons the heroes have them. So going by JoJo style, what names would you give their stands? For example, say Bakugo's explosions were caused by a stand called TNT. So essentially just like come up with like a song that applies
a stand,
to...
A stand named song for each lead character.
Right. The only one I was able to come up with when I read this before was for Emma, Shot Through the Heart.
Okay, I could see that. That works.
Wait, that's not even the name of that song, though. Shit.
Is it You Give Love a Bad Name?
That's, You Give Love a Bad, so that's not even... I mean, There are definitely songs like that, but yeah, that's right. That's not the name of that song. Oh, I feel ashamed now.
I'm trying to think of like a song that fits Luffy in like a rubber element, but it's like, I'm trying to think of like a bounce back or something like that. That's not like a term. That's not a song, I don't think. All right, hold on. Let me go through. You know what? I might actually call. I'm just gonna use my one from Dice Funk, where my character actually got a stand. I just called him Fat Boy Slim. I feel like Fat Boy Slim kind of fits with like what Luffy does. He just loves like blowing himself up and like getting skinny and shit and just punching people. Kind of fits in with what they're going for there. I think someone just got murdered in the background, or an ambulance went off. Not one of the two. I'm trying to think of the other series. Dirty White Boy for Asta, of course. that makes the most sense.
I guess.
It did 100% perfect sense. So people are saying Rubber Band Man works. I don't know. It's not that. Oh, wait. Is there a series with anyone who's got like creepy powers, Nick?
From the protagonists?
Yeah, or anyone, I guess. Because I got a good one. I just need an example of someone that fits into it.
I don't know. I mean, there was... Go ahead.
I was going to say, fuck it. I'm going to give it to Soma. He gets Voodoo Child.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's actually tougher than you would think it is, because of how weirdly specific some of the powers in the manga are. So.
It's one of those ones that I could probably come up with more time.
Yeah.
But, cause I, there was a point in the season of Dice Funk where we all got stands and I sat around figuring up stand names for everybody. So I have plenty of good examples. Cold Hard Bitch is a great stand name. It's just waiting there, but nobody in Jump really has a power set that really fits that great kind of stand name.
Need to have a nice power, yeah.
Yeah, or just be a mean person. I mean, a mean person in general. Yeah, so... Wait, was that my question still?
Yes. Because there's a question four.
Oh, okay. I thought you were reading this one.
I am reading this, yes, you're right.
Okay.
continuation of my previous email's question. When last we left our valiant podcasting protagonist, they had been kidnapped by a strange supernatural entity and were forced to kick the shit out of alternate universe versions of themselves using some of two stands. Unfortunately, the entity was not entertained by your puny squabble. Rather, it now seeks to witness a gigantic battle between some kaiju and giant mecha. Still having less imagination than Grummy, it again turns the two of you to decide which kaijus are fighting and which giant mechs you get to pilot. So out of all the kaiju and giant mechs in anime and manga, which ones would you choose? This is actually really difficult because not a lot of the stuff that we've read actually deals with, you know, giant monsters and giant mechs. The only one that's actually springing to mind is Bokura no. And, no, we're not going to pilot that one because we'll die after using it.
Nick, don't you want to pilot Bucarano and just, we deal with all of our trauma in these one-on-one moments and then the one of us that didn't go first has to watch as you, the other one dies and then we need to pilot knowing inevitably we're going to die too?
Hey!
It's going to be super fun. We could call it like Wacky Ship Ahoy or something like that. We get to rename.
Happy pop song. We're all dancing around, and then as each episode progresses, instead it's just a corpse sitting there instead of the character dancing around.
Yeah, every time we pilot it, I put in my mixtape, and it starts with Holiday Road from the Vacation movie, and then it goes into classic 90s hits like Vacation, All I Ever Wanted, Nick. Vacation had to get away. And then it's just your corpse line next to it. I'm just like, I feel like I should have picked a different soundtrack. I really don't know that many great examples of this. I would like to pilot the Frankie robot against anything, I guess.
I think that's probably our best choice.
That'd be pretty sweet. All right. Next group of questions here from Knopf. Dear Nick, a more accurate translation would be duty instead of responsibility, but even Joe doesn't deserve to be represented by poop. And Chris, you said it'd be creepy if one of the kids had the virtue of chastity. Well, Mimi's original title is Purity. Again, I don't get a last name. He gives you a last name, but I get nothing. Oh, no, he didn't give you a last name.
No, he didn't give you a last name this time.
Alright, fair enough. The eight crests of the Digidestined seem to be based on the combination of eight Taoist virtues and eight Confucius ones, but merged in a way that makes it difficult to tell which virtue is being referred to. For example, Kairi seems to take the place for the Confucius virtue of righteousness or justice, but in Taoism, righteousness is kind of what the virtue courage is in, Confucianism, which makes him more, which makes sense considering their siblings, but kind of explains why the name got changed to avoid confusion, which is why they screwed up by making it light. Mimi got the worst this twice over, as in practice, her virtue seems to be taking the place of a Confucius value, which translates loosely as empathy or equality, or willingness to feel and understand another and be understood. He has even more to deal with the explanation of their crests. And this is actually something I'm definitely going to be researching afterwards, but there's some interesting stuff here. However, he wants to know about a question here. I was going to email this question at the end of Bleach, but I forgot it until looking all this up. Can we all agree that the ending to Bleach and Digimon Season 2 are bad enough that there's no real merit trying to decide which of these two is technically the worst ending to a franchise that started out great, then took a nosedive in the second half? So I'll ask this. Which series had the more disrewarding ending?
It's like the game shows a new car surprise, then a rewarding ending is really expensive car, and unrewarding was one where they couldn't afford the car, so they just gave you $1,000 check, and a disrewarding ending is like, they do give you a car, but they fished it out of the ocean, so it's 60% rust and 50% barnacles. It just kind of sours some of the fun you had with the show series. That's hard to answer, honestly, because I had been so out of Bleach for so long that by the time the ending came around, I was just like, well, this sucked. But it has been sucking for years. With Digimon, though, I don't know. That's hard because I watched it when I was a kid, and I liked the ending for the most part. I thought the epilogue was kind of weird. And then looking back on it when I was a adult, I was like, this is stupid. But also, it never occurred to me when I was a kid just how randomly out of nowhere the sudden, you know, it was my oldest mon! How weird that was. So, I don't know, it's been so long since I've actually seen Digimon 2 proper in order to actually properly answer this question, I think.
It's tough for me to say because part of the reason Digimon Season 2's ending is so irritating is because of the way it kind of treats the main cast and gives them kind of like these random ass jobs at points. And that's fair. Like, it's easy to be, like, annoyed by that. But at the same time, I didn't watch Season 2, like, Adventure 2, partially because I didn't care for the new cast as much. So it's almost as though I can't really consider it. Like, I know it's all the same, like, creation team, I believe, everything like that. But it's hard for me to make the same connection, like, of sure. Saying, like, oh, Season 2's ending so bad when it's like, but I barely watched Season 2. Like, if I just ignored it and pretend Season 1 ends the way it does, like, it seems okay there. So I guess in that way, it's less rewarding to, like, go through Bleach, because at least it was one solid story. I don't know. It's a weird kind of division I have in my mind based on the fact I just didn't really care for Season 2 of Digimon. Or Adventure 2, sorry. But I could see why people would find it to be the more annoying of the two, based on just how arbitrary. How at least Digimon Season 2 didn't feel rushed, I guess, towards the end. It felt like it probably had the time to tell its conclusion, and it still had, like, the arbitrary shit at the end of, like, I don't know, fucking, like, Joe becomes an astronaut or something like that. Whatever, who cares? Ty opens up a noodle cart or whatever. Davis, whatever, one of those goggle kids. Who cares? They all have fun and forever Doc adventure.
So. Doc, yeah. Okay. Next is from Gottfried Schuldel. Hello and happy insert relevant holiday to you. There's a couple of Samurai Jack questions, which we already went over, so. Have you ever avoided something that you think you might have liked because of the fan base of said thing? That is an interesting question. I'm not sure.
I know there is, and I'm trying to think of a good example of one where I'm just like, I just don't want to fall into that. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, really popular stuff recently that I was just like, I don't want any part of this fandom, essentially. I think maybe Dark Souls plays a little bit into that. Because there's really a heavy fandom for Dark Souls that's pretty heavy into, like, discussing the lore and everything of it and everything along those lines and, like, really digging deep into it, discussing all the different builds. And I was just like, every time I read people discussing it, I'm just like, it doesn't do anything for me. I think that and maybe Doctor Who. I mean, I have a lot of reasons I don't watch Doctor Who, and maybe it is just the fandom. Like, I don't want to get into something where I'm, like, arguing about which Doctor I think is better and things like that. I'm like, I already have this with JoJo. I already have my, like, which series had the best whatever. I just don't want to dig into it with Doctor Who as well, but I recognize both are probably very good. I just don't have as much of an interest in them.
No, that's fair enough.
I don't want to also insinuate that the fan base as far as those are bad. I just don't think I want to be. It just doesn't seem like,
just don't want to get involved.
Yeah. It just seems like, yeah, once you get involved, you go hard into those.
No, that's definitely fair enough. I don't really have an answer, unfortunately, to offer for that one, so let's just move on.
True that. Question from Career Knight. Greetings, Chris. I am a sexy shoeless god of Rollo T. Larios and Nick, not Nick, not Y Ruler Time Freeman. Love the podcast. Have a few questions for you. First.
Those are some great references.
Those are. The order of the stick in case you guys are curious. First question. You are transformed into Master Masculine and James. Up to you which one is who, and you're transported to the world of One Piece, My Hero, or Bleach. What do you do in each of them?
One Piece, we join the Straw Hats.
Yeah, obviously.
Come on.
Now, we should decide who's Master Masculine and who is James. Now, logically, I feel I would be more appropriate of Master Masculine since I have the very large personality, but I want to be James because I want to be the shit heel that follows you around, just being like, you go get him, Nick, ding, ding, and I have, like, a little bell. And, like, you've been impaled in a wall, and I'm just like, I believe in you, Nick! I believe in you, Nick! And then you get up, you're just like, your power gives me strength! And I'm like, yeah! Like, my Kermit Frog's
getting
going.
Increasingly brutal.
Yeah. I'm pretty stoked about that. I guess we don't want to go to the Bleach World, we just die there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened in Bleach, so... Let's do One Piece and we'll join the Straw Hats. There you go.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Also, did Master Masculine have a pretty bitchin' beard or mustache?
He had a mustache, yeah.
So there you go. So, yeah, definitely be you. All right. Sorry, I got distracted looking up Master Masculine's mustache. Second question. Of all the guys you got, out of all the manga you guys have covered in the past, is there any villain you think you could defeat?
Yes.
There's definitely some out there. I could probably beat up
because some of them, so, especially the villains in Gyakyu Hote that were kids.
Oh yeah, we could punch the shit out of some like fourth graders.
Fuck you, 8-year olds.
Take this, 10-year-old child. Bump, bump, bump. Just stomping them in the face.
Look, I defeated a manga villain. Look at how awesome I am.
I stopped the great evil, everybody.
Why are we the NWO?
I want to feel like that's like a cool theme song moment. I'm spray painting NWO on the kids' back. They're like, it was.
I'm the hero.
I'm the best character in the show.
Now let's load him into this car and smash a truck into him.
They're like, you know,
I'm the hero.
You know, in wrestling, they usually have a way to make sure these things aren't as dangerous. I feel they're taking no precautions in this as I'm just hanging out the side of the truck. I'm the hero.
Heroes take no precautions, brother. I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if we name any actual villains anymore. We've came up with the best answer already.
Yeah. I'm sure that, no, never mind. I was going to say a couple Ice Shield characters, but I'm like, no, a lot of them are probably in shape. Last question. You two are accepted in Totsuki Culinary Academy, but after seeing your prowess with Honey Mustard Pop-Tarts, they realize there must have been some major clerical error. Annoyed to admit the mistake publicly, they allow you to take on a partner to help you out. You each get to take one character from another manga you currently cover.
Oh, another manga?
How well do you do? I'm like, all right, well, I take that kid from Gakyo Hote, and I beat the shit out of him, and I become the king of Totsuki based on my sweet child beating skills.
Make him my opponent so I win every Shokugeki.
Exactly. Oh, man, I'm going to crush the shit out of the little kid.
Especially after I've broken all four of his limbs.
Good luck cooking your fucking flapjacks with that. Everyone's,
I'm the hero. Eat my food, judge.
Eat my honey mustard flapjacks. They're like, oh, it's so gross. Literally, other kids spit on a plate, it'll be better, I'm sure. I would say probably Komatsu, right? Like, he has the power to cheat, essentially, so I feel like he'd be a really good partner. Plus, I feel like we'd get along a lot. Oh, no, actually, and, I want Osamu. I want to hang out with Osamu. Never mind.
If Komatsu's not available to me, then I guess I'll take Ogata, because apparently she knows how to make udon, so, Pop-Tart udon.
It's like, oh, wow, this is an eclectic dish. Oh, wow, when you put them in the water, it really just falls apart, doesn't it? Oh, it's everywhere. You know, the ingredient you had to pick was strawberry. You could have just picked strawberry Pop-Tarts, but you decided to go with brown sugar cinnamon despite that.
It's like a Pop-Tart!
Oh, man. All right.
I'm a hero.
Yes, very good question. Thank you, Career Knight.
Oh, man. Oh, thank you for those. Those are great. All right. This one comes from Andre Golden. Dear Godzilla, the ruler of time, and King Kong T, I recently watched the new Kong movie, and I am curious if you watch giant monster movies like Godzilla. If you do, then who's your favorite monster? There are examples provided as well.
I do not. I wish I did, though, because one of the fandoms I would like to get more invested in is, like, the kaiju monster series kind of stuff, because there is just an inherent kind of, like, nerdy cool quality of, like, the series of different monsters and everything like that. Like, I've always thought Mothra was cool, because Mothra doesn't feel like a traditional kind of monster in the same way that, like, Godzilla does, so I always thought that was, like, a really cool one to dig into. And I just love how, like, you know, extensive and huge the Godzilla universe is, how many different characters there are and everything like that. Like, I just feel like that'd be a really cool thing to get invested in at some point. Plus, King Kong's dope.
I had this awesome Mechagodzilla when I was a kid. But I'm actually going to go with Gigan, the bladed robo monster with a random buzzsaw that runs down the length of its torso for some reason.
That one's a pretty dope one, too.
I did watch a fair number of Godzilla movies when I was a kid, including King Kong versus Godzilla.
But, the American or Japanese version?
I don't know. It's been too long since I've seen it.
Oh, no. So. Who won?
King Kong.
I think that's a Japanese version, then? I forget if I heard it's the reverse or it's just the straightforward way, like the American version, the American character wins the inverse. Mm. Oh, well.
All right.
Was it my question or yours?
Yes, it's yours.
Okay. I was like, oh, God, Nick's doing like a computer programmer answer. Yes. I'm like, oh, you tell me which one. Come on, Nick. Hello, Chris. I'm currently playing as a wild magic change sorceress named Zoe Larios. And Nick, better not tell Chris about the Osamu Yubel encounter from GX Freeman. Uh-oh, Nick.
I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but okay.
Is there an Osamu Yubel encounter from GX, Nick?
No. There's a Yubel encounter. I don't know exactly what the Osamu reference is. Might need to explain that one to me, Shockwave.
True that. Questions one here. Boruto theory. How much do you want to bet Gaara started the train project so he could more easily visit his best friend Naruto on a regular basis?
That would be adorable. Yeah. I'm guessing that it is more just to, improve relations between the villages since they're so distant from each other and also a matter of progression of technology. But if it were also him being like, I want to visit my friend more, then that'd be really cool.
Oh, he actually has the explanation later on in question 5, so we'll get to it.
Oh, okay.
Question 2, if invited, how far would you be willing to travel for cons? I think we mentioned this a little bit ago, but just in the general notion, like in the general area of the United States I'm in, I'd be willing to travel, like anywhere in the Northeast, depending on whether or not it's something I need to get. Like, if I need to pay for plane travel, it's probably not going to be happening, but if it was something where it's like, hey, drive to Pittsburgh to be at this con or something like that, or drive to fucking Baltimore or anything like that, like, those are all cool. Yeah, I'm all fine with that. And if they're paying for it, I'll go fucking anywhere. You could send me to fucking bumfuck Antarctica. I don't care. I like vacations. Have you guys seen the swimsuit edition of World Trigger, a.k.a. the filler from the anime? No, I've not.
No, I feel like I should. I was not aware of that.
I feel like I need to, though, now. Number four, Chris, serious question, but what do you use to upload podcasts to Podbean? I've been having difficulty getting the World Trigger podcast stuff on there. I'm not sure exactly what you mean on that. I mean, Podbean has like a built-in thing that you just click it and just upload a file onto it. So if you're having an issue with that, I mean, it is worth noting that we do pay for a, not premium, because I think there's like a level above what we have, but we have a paid, like a level of service to Patreon, to Podbean, which lets us upload several episodes a month rather than, I think, if you deal with the free service, it's like one. So we have that. But if you're referring to like the file format, I just upload everything as MP3s up onto there. So, if you need more help on that, just send me a like more specific question. And I think you have me on Skype too, so you can send it there too, and I'd be happy to help you out. Question four, Nick, have you ever gone to a tournament to play Yu-Gi-Oh? And if so, how did you do?
The only tournament I've gone to for Yu-Gi-Oh was actually to watch, not to play. So, I guess no.
How did you do, though?
I mean, I had a good time.
There you go. Then you were the true champion.
It's kind of funny because, like, God, I think that I ended up playing somebody on the side and used a Gravity Bind effect monster deck. And it was actually unusual at the time to use so many effect monsters. This was how fucking early on in the game it was. This was before Legacy of Darkness came out. So I was like, are all your monsters effect monsters? And he was like, it's the only way to go. And he essentially used, what he did was he used Gravity Bind so that none of my monsters could fucking attack him. And then he used a couple of Dream Clowns so that every time that I put a monster down, he would destroy it. And then he would attack directly with the other Dream Clown, along with his Hayabusa Knight. So he was dealing, you know, like 2,000 damage a turn while destroying my monsters, and I couldn't do anything because, well, my deck sucked at the time, I'll be honest, so.
I understand that.
That was not officially part of the tournament, though.
Question five. So referencing the name phrase I gave Nick, I've been awoken to a theory about why Osamu is so weak at World Trigger. It's all happening in the Osamu from World Trigger, or from Yu-Gi-Oh! GX's mind as a form of torture from Yubel because Osamu insulted Yubel. This leads to him being the way he is at World Trigger because of Yubel's torture techniques. Thoughts?
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Osamu, Yu-Gi-Oh! Oh, that guy. All right. I did not know he actually even had a fucking name. So there's a flashback in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, which explains, part of the connection between Yubel and Judai. Essentially, the guy's like, you got a terrible card, Judai. And he was like, fuck this guy and makes him hurt. So he's such a minor character too. I think the guy goes into like a coma or something like that. And he's never heard from again. At least him being the way he is in World Trigger as Yuval's torture technique. Thoughts? No, because Osamu in World Trigger is awesome. He's way too dignified for this to be a tortured existence brought on by Yubel.
And last question here. Could Asta defeat August? Yes, he absolutely could, because we found out Asta, or August 1 weakness is, anything that's actually a physical form of magic song. So there we go. Thank you for the questions there, Shockwave. I think we'll probably be finishing up here relatively soon then.
Yeah. Cause we're getting,
and we've gotten like 2 months done. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. We've blasted through this.
Alright. This one comes from Kenny Varnes. I'm going to get this reference wrong. Sorry. Dear Y-Y-Y-Y-Y, ruler of the Reflux in Ryo-G.
Or is it supposed to be like Alpha? Like, Y-Y-Y-Y-Y!
I don't know.
But I don't get what the ruler of Reflux is, so I don't know.
That's why I said I'm going to get the reference wrong. Anyway, we all know of the rivalry spawn between certain fandoms, such as Star Wars versus Star Trek, Nintendo versus Sega, Coke versus Pepsi, etc. But what about certain types of fandoms you didn't think would exist at all? Certain things that are popular, highly influenced by really obscure shit, but fans of said obscure shit don't realize this and start calling whatever is popular rip-offs. The hipster motto of, I was into X before it was cool, if you will. Rank these 5 pairs of fantards do you think will be likely to start a flame war should they ever cross paths from most to least? Gal Gaigar versus Gurren Lagann fans, in terms of best reconstruction of the super robot genre. Slam Dunk versus Kuroko's basketball fans. Hajime no Ippo versus Ashita no Joe fans. Yakitake Japan versus Food Wars fans. And Haikyuu versus Touch fans. Touch being that one manga from one of Nick's favorite authors, Mitsuru Adachi. I mean, look, anytime that a more modern thing comes around, along, that an older manga is done, there's going to be some influence felt from it. I mean, I don't know enough about the fandoms of those older series, though, to be able to tell you, how bitter or protective any of them are about it. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, similarities between, you know, three different types of sports, mangas that go for those. There have been a bajillion different baseball manga, you know, giant robot series and freaking foods and cooking series and stuff. There's going to be some sort of influence between them, and there's going to be similarities drawn between them. And whichever one is the newer one, people are going to inevitably probably claim is a ripoff of a previous one. So, nothing is original anymore, is all that matters. I don't know what to tell you. And I don't think Chris is currently here right now. Okay. He's abandoned me, and I couldn't tell because there's no video. Oh, there he is.
There you go.
Yeah, you're back. Yes, sorry. Now I can hear you.
Sorry, I accidentally disconnected my mic there. No, I have not much to add. You're good.
Okay. Your biggest fan, Tark and Eve Barnes. Okay.
To Mr. Freeman and Mr. Larios, respectively. I know you won't reach this question for about half a year, but as of,
It was a third of a year.
Yeah. But as of writing this message, it's only been a couple days since I graduated medical school and have officially become a physician. Thank you. Congratulations. That's pretty awesome. That is extremely great. We actually have a doctor listening to us, Nick.
That's great.
As such,
you know we're awesome.
Yeah. Now you do it. As such, I want to thank you guys for the hard work over the years and giving me my favorite podcasts to listen to when I was studying, exercising, or slacking off. You can now officially say that one out of one doctors recommend listening to Weekly Manga Recap on a regular basis. Hells yes. That has become our new tagline. Now then, on to my questions. Is there any moment in manga you can remember where, despite the magical and otherworldly possibilities of the series, the absurdity of the moment breaks your suspension of disbelief? For me, and maybe it's just because of my medical background, it was Urza's birth in Fairy Tail. So the scene opens with Irene swaying and panting like she just gave birth, implying it was all natural, but everything is so clean. There's no belly pooge, no blood, just a smiling, severely deformed baby with a giant head and arm the size of thumbs. I understand the artistic license that childbirth is gross to the general public, but it leaves you so many questions. Did Irene get Urza out magically? But then why does the scene seem to apply a natural delivery? It's dumb, but I'm so hung up over the scene.
She's Urza. Therefore, she had a beautiful birth.
Exactly. She's Urza, so she didn't need to subscribe to the normal things like grossness and childbirth.
Now, in terms of a moment that broke your suspension of disbelief. Oh, no, Chris, you want to take this one?
Yeah.
I'm going to be over here blowing these bubbles for my roller skates.
Well, everything you said sounds like it fits in the context of the world and makes perfect sense. So, yeah, no, I can't think of a single example of when that's ever happened.
Never had a freak out about this.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, there was one time I remember, actually it connects somewhat similar to something you just brought up, Nick. Where a character decided that they could fucking spin bubbles so fast they could cut through steel, and that was a legitimate way to fight against characters and try to kill them. And you're just like, what? Why? How?
Didn't a guy like do a scientific breakdown of the explanation behind this, and you were like, no.
Someone tried to. It's one of those things where I recognize, because there was a point in time where someone had told me, like, if you spray water really, really fast and cut through steel, it's like, that was bullshit. And I was like, oh, wait, no, hydro cutters are a real thing. Like, when you pressurize and fire water out that fast, it legitimately can cut through steel and all those things. But bubbles aren't water in the same way. And you can't just tell me you're spinning bubbles really fast and they're cutting through steel.
If it's going fast enough that it can cut through steel, then I'm pretty sure that it would it would no longer take the shape of a bubble.
Yeah. If you wanted to go with that, you should have just said you fire water so fast it fucking cuts through steel instead of being the fucking bubble character of Bubble Road and your bubble bullshit.
Everything's a road.
It's how my road's defined, Nick.
Oh, man.
It's the Monster Energy Drink Road. I drink Monster Energy drinks and then leave them behind me, and that's the road I travel.
Clink, clink.
And you're my wings, Nick, and the audience is my feathers.
Oh, prepare your fucking asses for Sadistic September 2 coming soon. I have to start reading Prince of Tennis now.
Question 2. The Promised Neverland just finished the escape arc as of this email and has quickly become my favorite weekly manga. Brian has been top-notch thus far, but who knows if it will continue in the current arc. Well, actually, you guys do kind of know, but past me is still full of hopes and dreams. If the manga is still great, what is one thing you could see them realistically see them do that could ruin it? If the quality has dropped, what do you think would have made things better in the new arc?
The quality has dropped a little bit. It's still good, but it's not amazing the way that it was in the previous arc. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of comes down to we're at a point where things have to be expanding.
Yes.
And so things aren't just moving forward and forward and forward towards a very simple goal. Things have to be more set up at this point. And so we're just kind of going through a slow stretch right now. I have faith that things will turn around, but that's my explanation as to why the quality has dropped a little bit.
If to give the explanation and for what he was looking for of what would be done to make it bad, like what would make it a drop in quality, I would say if the series really like focused forward on Emma being this expert archer and turning it into like a Hunger Games kind of scenario.
More of a battle manga.
Or just like a young, you know, YA sort of series of Emma, this amazing character archer and all that stuff. Like it needs to stay true to what it was, which is like these kids just trying to survive using their intelligence. It's going to be fine. But if you're looking for a possible way it could start sucking, that would probably be the way I'd see it most easily transitioning to. And question 3, which is a sad one.
Yeah,
hopefully by this point, World Trigger start up again. Sadly, it is not. But here's a final fun question. Take every other series you can cover into recap, including Naruto, Bleach, / Toriko if you want, and bring 3 to 4 characters over to the World Trigger universe. These characters make up their own squad using the standard triggers of Border. Who would you pick and what would the trigger be? The characters all have try-on bodies, none have access to their in-universe powers like Natsu's fire and Luffy's gum-gum fruit. If that's too much, you can simply choose a trigger letter for each main character only, except Asta, who would obviously have no trine and would just beat up neighbors in the real neighbors using his real body using, I don't know, a baseball bat.
Just imagining, like, all these guys in their uniforms, you know, getting ready and going through training with all these different unique weapons. Ash just comes out and is just like, I'm gonna be the Wizard King!
Buff, buff, buff!
There's no Wizard King in our world, Asta! Ah!
There are no wizards! What are you doing? I'm gonna be on the Try-On King then! You have no Try-On!
Bump, bump, bump!
No, you don't understand! There's already a story of a character who lacks the universe's power source! You can't do this!
Oh, God.
I feel like they'd be really good ones, but, I feel like we don't have enough time to actually dig into these so much.
One Piece, obviously you'd have Zoro be the attacker, mm-hmm. and, Usopp be the sniper. And I feel as though just because you would have Luffy be, the third guy, but I don't know.
I kind of think Sanji would be a really good character to put in there as like a gunner, but you need somebody with like intelligence. The issue is that Sanji mm-hmm. and Zoro hate each other. So that's an issue that you'd have to deal with. But
yeah.
I feel like you'd really want Sanji as part of that team because you need someone with some battle sense to them, like strategy. And Zoro is great on his own, but he's not going to care about everyone else the same way. You need somebody.
You could have Luffy be their wild card, maybe their substitute, the same way that Hughes is.
True.
And I guess Nami would have to be their coordinator because.
Operator. She works. Yeah. I think that'd be a good role for her.
Mm-hmm.
Although I feel like she might actually be an interesting third member on the team, because if you put Try-On in, she has a good sharp mind. I feel like she could find really interesting ways to use like traps and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she probably would fit pretty well as a gunner. Like, a gunner kind of fits that climb attack feel. So, yeah, I think she'd actually be the third member. Fuck Zoro, or Sanji. She's out.
He's their cook.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's see here. I mean, obviously, if you have Promised Neverland, you're probably just going to end up having, you know, Emma and Norman and Ray. No. Let's take out Norman since he's, you know, technically, you know, not available. And we'll have Emma and Ray and Don, and Gilda could be their operator. And let's see, Emma's a sniper. Don would be an attacker. Ray, I think, would be more of an Osamu-type role, an in-betweener, sets of traps and stuff like that. And then Emma would be a sniper, because she's, you know, using her bow, which is, I guess, closest to a sniper rifle. Mm. Let's see. Black Clover, if we're going to have Asta just, you know, be off on his own, like, he's not even on a team. He's not invited to that.
It's just Asta Squad, which is just him. He has no operator. He has no other members. He's not actually a part of Border. He just runs around when shit gets real and's like, Asta Squad's here to help! Hurrah! Just, like, fucking baseball bats people's heads off. Everyone's like, I hate this kid.
Shouldn't we, like, arrest this guy, you know, for doing this with allies and stuff? Yeah, but, you know, he's helping, you know.
He's taking out, like, 30 fucking Trion soldiers. I mean, six of them are ours, but still, he's helping in the way he thinks he can, so.
That's still a 4-to-1 ratio, you know, that's pretty good.
Look, it's better than last month, I'll tell you that.
Let's see here.
He's essentially just fucking paranormal agent or paranoia agent. He's just the kid with the golden bat who skates back.
He finds a pair of rollerblades, but he's Asta, so he's also really clumsy on them, and he's constantly crashing into things.
Whoa! Boom! It just kills people with baseball bats.
And of course, he's not wearing a helmet because he's Asta.
Yeah.
Let's see, if we use the Black Bulls, that's a little bit difficult. It's tempting to just have Yami be a swordsman, but it's like, I don't know. It seems unfair.
Yami can't be in there. He's too old. It's all about being a kid.
Right,
a Trion. So it'd be like, you'd want to put like Noelle in there and she could be like a gunner who just, or she's like right, Chica. She could be Chica. She has
a ton of Trion, but she's got to find a way to utilize it properly.
Exactly. And then, you could put Yuno in there. He'd probably be a gunner because that seems like the position a lot of like a Ninomiya gunner. Like he has tons of mana. And he's just super good at using it.
Right. He's probably got a, he's probably kind of a Gazama type. He's very good at stealth as well. Mm-hmm. And, I guess you would have to throw someone else in there. Let's see.
You could put Luck in there. Luck already kind of has like Trion.
And he's quite an attacker kind of guy.
Yeah. You could put him in there and just kind of put him in the same way Kitora works, where she like uses her Trion weapons, like the scorpions, as like ways to just create weapons out of her hands and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And God works.
We want to do any more, or?
I think we're good on that. I think we covered the main ones. Food Wars, I think you're getting into a lot of, like, sketchy territory. But I'd like to note that Dr. Trap, I'll call him, actually included, like, a written typed version of this email as well as an attachment. So, pretty cool about that. I think you went above and beyond. So thank you very much to our who gives us the accolade. And once again, congratulations to you. I know that's definitely a very challenging path to go, and congratulations for accomplishing it. And we're proud that we were able to help you in any step of the way. But remember, those accomplishments are yours. So congratulations.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think that we'll wrap things up here then. So thank you guys for sending in your questions. If you want to ask us, something else, or also, you know, answer the question that we provided at the top of the show, you can send that to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We're actually catching up a little bit.
Yes.
I think the last time we did this, we were, we were 5 months behind. And so when we start next time, we're going to be 4 months behind instead. So there you go. We're slowly closing the gap about a half a month per episode.
Every day, a little bit closer.
So, who knows, we might get to a point soon enough where we're only 2 months removed from asking your questions, and you guys won't be able to make as many of those jokes.
Yep.
All right. So that's going to do it. We will see you next week for the regular episode. There was just no manga released this week, so we just figured we would do the Q&A episode in place of that this time.
Yes, so I think we'll probably have Hanataru?
Akunohana.
Akunohana. I got really
close. Are you reading the right one, Chris? Are you reading the right series?
I'm like, it's going to be fucking Biomeat all over again.
No, there was a bear. Yeah.
Yeah, it all made sense. I think we'll cover that next week. I'm bad with names, so forgive me on that, but we'll cover all that. And I think that's it. Do we want to leave? Headed out with anything? Do you remember that time, Nick, that the Giants were in the Super Bowl and there was that song about Eli having to put on his Superman cape?
I vaguely remember that, yes.
I don't know why it was the first thing that popped into my mind, and I realized there's absolutely no tangent to fall off from on it, so I was really hoping something new would pop up in the space of this conversation as I'm speaking, but it really sounds like nothing is. So I guess goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.